Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday from the past.
Hi, happy Tuesday. Welcome to this mini-sode of Angle On Producers with me, your host and fellow producer, Carolina Gropa, and my mentee, associate producer. How do I introduce you?
Sarah.
The one and only Sarah Bakken.
Yeah, that's good.
There she is.
That sounds good.
Hi, how goes it?
Hi, it goes well. I didn't realize until this week that it was Women's History Month. And I think it's because I've been so busy this month. We have been so busy this month. And I feel like women shouldn't have to work this month. That's my personal opinion. And yet here we are. But I thought personally, in honor of Women's History Month, we could just do like a little shout out to all of the amazing women that we've had on the show this year so far. I have loved editing these episodes. They've been super insightful for me on a personal level, and I have just thoroughly enjoyed every moment of them. So shout out to anyone listening who's been, you know, a recent guest. It's been an honor to hear your words of wisdom. And you, Carolina, you were a guest on a very cool panel that we have not talked about yet, but you post about it on Instagram, and I knew about it when it was happening. But you were on a panel. Explain to me what this was. This was with Melinda Gates and Emmy Aniobi, and who else? Like, what was this?
Talaine Jones. Yeah. So just to backtrack before we jump into Melinda Gates of it all and the incredible opportunity I had. Yeah. Like, happy Women's History Month to you as well. I agree. We should just be gifted the gift of napping all month and just resting and being pampered. Like, there should just be like free spa days and free ice cream and free wine everywhere you go, in my opinion. But
amen.
Slowly but surely. Yeah, just some incredible female guests on the podcast this year, even particularly this month. We had Cynthia Erivo and Judalina Nera, who's a dear friend. Just women that really inspire me. And I'm inspired by so many women in my life. These are just two that I happen to like record a conversation with. But it's such a nice reminder of the work and the advocacy that so many are doing. You know, one of the things I said in the conversation with Melinda is that I feel like we're all making these little ripples in the waters, but we really need a tsunami to make the changes that we want to see. But at least I'm grateful that there's many, many individuals, not just women, but people who advocate for a lot of the things that I talk about on the show, who are out there with their own versions of the ripples that they can make within their own bandwidth and access and circle of influence to be a part of like changing the tides, to keep on that metaphor. Though I don't even know if that makes sense, but still, you know, really amazing sort of once in a lifetime opportunity, which I hope becomes more of the norm instead of the outlier. But I actually got connected to Pivotal Ventures, which is a company that Melinda founded in 2015. She founded it with the mission to advance social progress in the U.S. on behalf of women and families. And she committed over $1 billion over the next decade to expand women's power and influence. So, you know, she's done a lot of work within healthcare and other sectors, but I find it really interesting that she's now taken a curiosity into entertainment and arts, the arts, right? Because we sit at the epicenter of having the social responsibility of a lot of the stories that we get to tell and who is seen and how are they represented. Like, as we know, that carries a lot of social responsibility, but it informs and shapes perspectives, identities, conversations, policies sometimes. Like, yes, it's art and it's entertainment, but it really brings a lot of people back to core values that maybe they don't even realize they have. So I was delighted when a podcast listener actually recommended me to be a part of the panel with Emmy Aniobi, who is just like such a G and someone I really admire and respect everything she's built. She's got her own company, super special, but obviously she came up also writing on Insecure, writing and directing, and is just a brilliant voice in the space herself. And Talaine Jones, who I actually didn't know very well, but she's been running Array, which is Ava DuVernay's company, for a long time and has been there from the jump helping Ava build what she's built. So it was really an incredible hour to get to spend with these two giants of our industry, these women of color, and sharing a table with them and Melinda Gates to really dive into like women who advocate for DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, how we do that within our respective lanes of the job of Hollywood, how successful we've been, what the bottlenecks still are. It felt like she really wanted to just have like a deeper understanding of what actually it is versus the optics that Hollywood likes to present. And I think many could say, well, you had Barbie and there was Taylor Swift and Beyonce. Oh my God, women are crushing it. Yet, you know, the data out of this year's Annenberg report shows us that we're back to levels that we were in the 2010s as far as where women are and the progress that we've made in terms of opportunity. So, you know, anyone who listens to the podcast knows that I talk about this ad nauseum in the variety of ways. It's a topic I really, really care about. So to get to have that conversation with someone of such influence like Melinda, who has obviously the power, the reach, the resources to really be a part of this change in a really tangible way, is super exciting. And on a more personal level, it just felt like, here's this like immigrant girl from Brazil who's had to fight tooth and nail for everything she's built and like every opportunity I've had and every, you know, I've carved out my own lane in Hollywood and it's been with its challenges and a lot of tears and a lot of frustrations. And many people know I'm very candid about the anxiety and depression and all the things that comes with the lulls of doing this career path. But moments like that just remind you of like, wow, like I am here truly because of the fruits of my own labor and my own resilience and my own grit and my ability to like keep staying the course regardless of how hard it gets. And I applaud myself, you know, in honor of Women's History Month, because we have to celebrate ourselves. We have to celebrate the wins. I talk about this all the time. It's so easy to encourage other people to do it, but it's hard to do it for yourself because it feels like icky. Women are not, you know, taught or empowered to celebrate their wins and talk about themselves in that way. And it certainly feels foreign even to me, but hopefully little by little, we can deprogram that sort of capitalistic, imperialistic mentality and celebrate something again that to someone else is just like a piece of content that maybe posting on IG. But this matters so much to me and it's such like a feather in my cap that propels me to keep going just a little longer. So yeah.
Look at you being all inspirational and shit.
Look at me inspiring people.
Oh, that's crazy. Wait, so just clarify for me a little bit. So her, Melinda's initiative is she's pledging $1 billion to do what? Like, what is the goal there?
So the goal, as I understand it from the, you know, blurb in the background of the company, is to advance social progress in the U.S. on behalf of women and families. And I think looking at entertainment is one of those places, right? So Pivotal is actually something she founded on her own in 2015. She certainly has the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that she's a co-chair of. But I think once they obviously split, like she figured out how to also pivot, hence probably the name of the company, to have her own way to build women up in all the ways that she's already done it. I mean, she's been doing this work for a really long time, really since the 2000s. And I think because as I understand it, Melinda Gates and a bunch of others, I think Lorraine Powell Jobs, was also, they were investors in Origin. You know, I think the story, I shared this article a while back that even Ava DuVernay couldn't get money to go make a movie that was going to be a high, you know, high budget to do and tell a story that is extremely important about the class system and how we got to be here. And so she somehow partnered with these women who have, again, circle of influence and the financial means to get behind it. And so my spidey sense is that Melinda having that experience really inspired her to get a little more curious about why is this so difficult? What is going on? Because as everyone knows, the smoke and mirrors of Hollywood, it's like there you never really can trust what you're seeing and reading because when you go behind the curtain where the Wizard of Oz is, it's just like a shit show half of the time. So,
yeah. So true. So where do you think in terms of, you know, creating this gender equality in Hollywood, in terms of, you know, financial investment, where do you as a producer see that money having the most benefit? Like, is that funding independent women-driven projects? Is that, you know, investing in the next, you know, generation of undiscovered women talent? Is, you know, where does that money go in your eyes as a producer, someone who knows budgets and where, and on a very personal firsthand basis, where the money is lacking the most? Like, where in your mind do you see it going?
D, all of the above. I think that we are in an economic downturn. And whenever that happens, women and people of color are the first to be impacted historically. We are set back. And so when you talk about a pipeline of incubating more storytellers, more creatives, more filmmakers to bring these stories to life, more executives to get into positions of leadership, where are those people? So if there's a pipe, I've always said this, I think you can't look at the middle of the pipeline and try to fix that. You have to go to the very beginning. And so it starts with investing in women and creators of colors from the short film stage. It's like sometimes just even, we've talked about this a ton, like just getting a little bit of money to go make your first thing that can really launch you in the festival circuit is so hard and is such a hard road for most people. If you don't have privilege and access, that's already going to keep you leaps behind other people that can go make something for $10,000 or have access to certain things that you may not. So I think if I, you know, was to allocate how those funds are spent in my like dream of dreams, it's really looking at the holistically, it's not about investing for just a financial return. The return has to be a long game of like diversifying the workforce in 10 years, diversifying what things look like in 10 years. So it's not a simple equation of like, well, just let's just make a bunch of shorts or let's just finance this. But we need more women and people of color having at-bats. I think Cord Jefferson said it perfectly in his speech. You know, that was his first time making a feature, yes, but also he'd been working as a successful television writer for some years, you know? Wasn't like he just was discovered and made his first independent film and here he is on the road to the Oscars. That can happen, but that's like play the lotto. It's the same thing, you know? So how do we find more Cords, more Issas, more Amy Aniobis, more of these people early in their career and give them not just money, because that's not enough. Give them the education, the financial literacy around this, empower creatives to understand the business, how it's changing, how to make smart bets on yourself, how to tell stories that still fulfill your creative vision for what you want to do, but then actually can be viable in this current marketplace. So that's what I think is like where that money would be best spent. And that's, again, a very micro, very quick answer to that question. I could talk about it forever, but I think that's one way that kind of support could really change the game. And it won't be something you see in a year. It's going to take 5-10 years for us to look and go, here's the diversified workforce we've been talking about. Here's like true equity among creators because they're getting these shots to go and fail and learn and find their voices. And people are giving them the space to do that.
Yeah, I totally get that. I have a question, and I've been trying to figure out how to phrase it in my head where I don't come off as like a jaded cynic who like is cosplaying as an optimist. But I'm just so curious, as a woman, obviously, I guess, how do we break this cycle of this lack of representation and lack, I guess, less lack of representation, although that's relevant, but also lack of resources for women? Because if we're allocating this money, this our hypothetical $1 billion that you and I are now allocating to the industry, if we allocate this to women, you know, who are, you know, just starting out creating these short films, we're getting these voices out there, but then you have someone at the top of their game, like Ava DuVernay, who can't even get financing for her huge projects. How do we overcome this? How do we surmount this? Because I'm starting to like, you know, process this information and I'm like, okay, great. Let's get all these voices out there. Let's bring them to the table. But then it's like, once they're sitting at the head of the table, they can't even get a meal.
I think you may not like my answer, but I honestly think that this is where we can be smart and intentional and leverage AI to the best of our ability. Because if we can figure out how to automate certain aspects of production and of certain parts of the process without taking away the creative vision and voice that belongs to some of these artists, the question becomes, we shouldn't prevent the Avas of the world from doing these high, big budget projects. But if these are the kinds of stories that are financially proven to not really make a return, at a certain point, the well is going to dry up. That's just simple economics. So how do we like work within the system to still be able to tell those kind of stories? Well, maybe instead of making a movie for $100 million, you got to find a way to do it for $50 million. right? So how do you do that without compromising all these other things? Then that's where my question becomes, how do we start training AI today to help us do what it can do for us so that we can focus that $50 million on the parts of the process that absolutely need it? And that's just like a very top of my mind answer, but that's I think one solve, that if we can just not be so terrified of what AI can be, but truly try to like start training women and people of color to understand how AI can benefit them, they will now be ahead of the game. Because I'm certain that all of the people that are currently working in this industry are hush hush learning all about this right now. And by the time they have a model built in, everyone else is going to be kind of left behind. So how do you, again, start to look at what is the reality of what things are instead of wishing it was different, and find opportunity instead of feeling defeated by what is? Like, and also Amy Aniobi says this in the conversation. It's like, this industry wasn't built for us. It was not built for us. It was built by a different type of people. And if we perhaps were trying to play the wrong game and winning in an industry that's constantly trying to oppress any progress that we make, it's about creating a whole different model altogether, right? So there's a lot of different answers to that, but that is like the, you know, sort of low-hanging fruit, I think, answer. But yeah, I think we're just going to be entering a season where those kinds of budgets are potentially financially irresponsible. But that also raises my question, like, did that movie have to be $100 million? I don't know the answer to that. But what if we could have made 10 movies for $10 million, like to Cord's point? How do we do that effectively? Not every story can be told at that price point. I get that. But that's my question, right? Like, why is it that one person gets a shot to make something at that price point, but we could have diversified those shots to 10 different people and allocated that money in a really cool way? But I get it. There's economics and business at play. And I know some people would say, well, the studios are going to put only X amount to market a movie anyway. They would rather do a big push to market one big movie than to do 10 smaller movies because it's just so hard to get people's attention.
Just such a bummer, because I miss, you know, what marketing for movies and TV used to be. Like, that to me was, you know, just like, I almost wanted to go into marketing because it was so creative and so fun and so interesting.
Yeah.
But I guess my question then becomes, because I guess from a, and again, not trying to be a cynic, but from a very, you know, protective standpoint, my worry with automating certain jobs when it comes to these big productions is that, are the first people who are going to be replaced by machinery women and people of color?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I wish I could answer that, but they don't have to be. Like, what if there's a world where they don't have to be? If women and people of color start to learn and understand AI in equal tempo with their contemporaries and have a better grasp on how to utilize that to aid their job, make them better and more efficient at their jobs instead of like replacing themselves, is that a solution? I don't know, you know?
Well, there's also a world in which, you know, not everything has to be a cinematic universe, and we don't need like the umpteenth sequel, spinoff, reboot of, you know, whatever. Right. And if you know how to get to that world, like, take me with you. Like, I want to be there. I want to be in the world of the hyped up indie project, the new voice, the up and comers, the authentic new material. That's where I want to be.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds amazing. Take me with you.
Yeah. Melinda, put us in, coach. We want, we got ideas. We got big ideas. Oh, what a cool experience. I'm so thrilled that you got to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like what a conversation that, to be frank, all of us should be having, if we're not already, you know?
Yeah. And I also think there's this sense of like, everyone wants to transform in some way, but nobody really wants to change because change is hard and scary and takes time. So how do you combat that? Like, and when you're dealing with a model, a business model that has been lucrative and worked for so many years, for so many decades, for so many other people, what propels the people at the top to find new ways of doing things? It doesn't. Like, it takes the little people on the ground to be like, this is an injustice. It really is like David and Goliath. It takes trying to figure out other ways to like take down the big bad wolf. But, you know, It's like we need simultaneously people storming the castle and being inside the castle as we do people on the ground coming up with what is the next thing. You can't just go burn it all down. Then what? What do you do from there? You know? So I hope that there's like a bunch of brilliant people thinking about this, and that a lot of people have used this time of these last 3-4 years of a lot of uncertainty to find ways that we can potentially diversify this model that has been dwindling for so many people. So yeah.
Well, give me a picket sign and a, you know, javelin. I'm ready to I'll go wherever I'm needed. I'm ready for some change.
I mean, a question for you though, as someone who is of youth and vigor and still, you know, has vitality and a vibrancy in their eyes. No, I do wonder, like, for younger people who are looking to enter this industry, if you watch everything that's happened over these last 4 years, what still propels young people to want to get in and do this work? What propels you?
Well, it's a lot of things, and you may not like this answer, but...
Fame?
Oh my God, no. Please, no. No, it's a few things. One is that, for me personally, I have just a deep-seated fear that I will regret leaving if I leave. For my entire life from youth, like, I always knew, like, I was meant to do something big career-wise. And that's still my number one priority, like above a family, above owning a house. Like if I had other financial priorities, like I think I'd have to leave. There's just no other way around it. But because I am lucky enough to come from not a wealthy family, but a family who is able to help me make ends meet when I can't, I am fortunate enough to be able to stay in LA when there's this huge contraction. And the work has dried up. There's nothing for, like, almost every assistant I know is not working right now. It's looking really, really bleak for television to, you know, get staffed, to get repped, to, you know, for anything for a green writer. It's just it seems fully insurmountable right now. And everyone seems to be in a state of, like, panic, chaos, or suffering. And so I think the only thing that really drives me is A, fear of regret, and B, just sheer gumption. Just like, I am now determined to prove a point, whether that means, like, you know, if I'm living in a dog kennel in the middle of the Hollywood Boulevard because I can't afford my rent anymore, which is coming sooner than I think, you know, like, come visit me and I'll give you a copy of my newest pilot. You know, like, I'm going to be doing this until I physically can't anymore. And that could be sheer stupidity, but I think it is the combination of that white male confidence along with having financial support that is what makes people successful in this industry. I don't even think it comes down to talent.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. It's that tenacity and your ability to weather all of this stuff. But I think that's great. Look, I think that that's the time in your life where you have to have that gumption about anything. I mean, that's how I felt in my 20s. That was like the only priority I had and the only thing I cared about, you know? And it, I don't know, some would say it paid off. It depends on the eye of the beholder, you know what I mean? Like, so no regrets there. But yeah, I think it's great to have people like you who still have the energy to, like, keep fighting it. We need new people like that coming in, bringing that youth and vitality. I don't mean that, like, in a, like, disparaging way, but, like, this is just such a marathon that it requires that new energy of people coming in still with excitement and enthusiasm for possibility and all of that, to remind the people that have been here and have been beat down quite a bit by it all, like, the why, you know what I mean? Like, how we all came to this with that kind of, like, not stars in our eyes, like, delusion, but just like this excitement and this thrill for why this matters, why stories matter, why this work is important, why we have to keep pushing forward. And we can't just go, all right, well, this is just what it is, you know, because if we all do that, then they win.
Exactly. I think, you know, that's the other part of it is, like, I'm very competitive.
Yeah.
Like,
so
I
gotta be in it to win it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna roll over. Like, if you want me out of the industry, you're gonna have to kick me out, you know? And then I might scale the walls to get back in. So we're just going to see. I mean, hey, ask me again in 10 years when I'm, you know, doing something completely different with my life. And I'm like, oh, I remember when I was a young assistant and getting paid scraps working for the worst people in the world. You excluded, of course.
Yeah. It's part of it. That's how you start to get that grit, that thick skin, unfortunately. It's part of the, what's the word, like being a part of the tribe.
Yeah.
It's the circus.
Paying your dues, right?
Yes. Paying your dues, literally, with your sweat.
And at the very least, if nothing else, I will have some amazing stories to tell on a front porch stoop to the neighborhood children one day.
Yes, yes, you will. You'll just do it through like augmented reality. Like you won't even be there. You'll just be a hologram anyway.
Long after I'm gone, my legacy. Let's go visit the neighborhood hologram who tells those horror stories about Hollywood.
But look, I know, just to wrap it up, like I know it can be easy to get into that doom and gloom place, and I certainly get there myself. And the AI of it all is scary. All of the uncertainties are scary. But what does inspire me and what does like propel me is how many women I meet on the show, off the show, how my days are really spent talking about this truly, like in trying to find solves for this and being in collaboration and conversation with other women and some men who are allies to the cause, who see the value and like remind us of the progress we've made and what's still possible. And that makes me feel like it's all worth it at the end of the day. You know, even if like we don't get to see the kind of progress we want in this lifetime, at least you're part of the movement and we can only build, like, it's like you're laying down bricks to build a bridge, right? And there's so many people that have come before us, Jane Fonda, who have like really lay down this foundation truly. And I feel like sometimes we're getting close to finishing that bridge to get to the other side. So if we stop now, it's all going to fall apart. That's kind of how I feel. And that's kind of what, you know, when I get down, I just let myself feel those feelings. But then I come back like ready to continue to just lay down the foundation, because what else am I going to do? You know, I don't really have any other alternatives. Like I want to, like, similar to you, it's like I want to say that I did everything I could in the time that I had and that I was a good person along the way and helped other people. So I think it's that. And yeah, and I think if more women can leverage their names and their star power to help bring up other women, that's another way that we can start to make that progress and get some of these green people, you know, propelled in the right direction. So I would love to see more of that personally.
Well said. Well said. Well, happy Women's History Month, and I'm super grateful for you and all of the other women mentors that I've had in my life, and Melinda Gates. Why not?
She's amazing. I mean, yeah, everyone who comes on the show is my secret mentor. I have like almost 100 of them. They just don't know it. No, I'm so grateful for the show. I'm grateful of all that it brings me, what it's taught me, the amount of incredible people I've gotten to meet who listen to the show because of the show. It's like this really cool symbiotic thing. Also very grateful to you to be on this like life journey with me and rolling in all the things and just trying to help us keep this going, this goodwill that we do for our community so that we can stay sane and stay the course.
I'm here, ride or die. I got you.
Appreciate it. All right. Well, if you don't subscribe to the show, please do. If you're not subscribed to the newsletter, please head on over to angleonproducers.com and sign up. And of course, if you are able to join our Patreon, please head on over to patreon.com/angleonproducers and sign up and join if you can at any tier so that we can have the financial means to keep this going and keep bringing you this amazing content. So thank you so much.
We have a very cool event coming up this weekend for our Patreon top tier subscribers. We have a coffee corner where you have access to myself and Carolina to ask us, but mostly Carolina, any, you know, pressing questions you may have. I'm here for good vibes.
Yeah, great. Good vibes. So come on over if you're part of the Patreon. Join us this Saturday. Love to see you and hear from you.